Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
What it is. Now, do not adjust your screens or adjust or play with your ears. This voice is way taller and deeper than the great Brian Kilmeade. This is Tyrus filling in for Brian Kilmeade on the Brian Kilmeade Show today. Very exciting day for me. Yesterday was a big day for me. My daughter's children's book came out, and on Gutfeld last night I got a chance to show the world. So I'm very excited. Very proud dad. We're already, looks like we're already selling out on Amazon. So I'm pretty excited about it. You can pick up copies, order from Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. And obviously, I got to give a shout out. Everyone's really, really excited about the awesome artwork that it was done by the great Eduardo Marquez. He's a Colombian artist who draws amazing horses. So if you get a chance, check it out. But my whole plan is to put the iPad down and bring back bedtime stories. So I'm very excited about that. But that's the positive thing that's going on in my life. But now we have to get to the grown adult situations, which is going on in the world. And I'm very excited. One of my favorite people. He's a role model and a mentor. The great Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. And, you know, he's the Dallas County Republican Party chairman, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director. He wears a lot of hats, more than I do. Former congressman in Florida's 22nd Congressional District. In the House from 2011 to 2013. Good morning, Mr. West.
Good morning, Tyrus. It's great to be with you. Congratulations on that children's book. And I agree, we've got to get back to reading with our kids and not just handing them an iPad.
Yeah, you know, and I just remember some of my fondest stories when I was a kid, when I remember, you know, where monsters are, but it was the way it was being read. The book was big enough and strong enough to where it was held and you sat or laid in bed while they read it or the teacher read it. And I just always thought of that. So I got a chance to recreate that with my daughter. So I'm pretty excited about it. And you know, you're a family man yourself, so I know you can relate.
Yes, I can. I got two little grandsons, 4 and 2.
Oh, that's hey, nothing like a good bedtime story with grandpa. But if I could, I hate to switch gears because you are, you know, with your vast knowledge, I'd like to jump in to the Iran situation. I want to play a SOT 18 for you and get your reaction from the president.
Mr. President, on Iran, do you have a message for the leaders currently of Iran?
Yeah, the message is they've got to show humanity. They've got a big problem. And I hope they're not going to be killing people. And I'm going to have a report very soon. It would seem to me that they have been badly misbehaving, but that is not confirmed.
Okay, so obviously you, the president of the United States, we're going to hear a lot of pushback from the other side about how this is none of our business. But I feel like it's such an oxymoron because we have all these protests about groups and that are not actually in trouble or not actually victims. And here you are, you having a situation developing in Iran, and there's so much pushback. You know, the president's authoritarian and he has no business doing this. What is your take on this?
Well, it's very interesting. If the left wants to say it's none of our business, it is our business since you have the Obama administration and the Biden administration enabling the regime there in Iran. We will never forget the plane that flew over to Iran in the middle of the night, unmarked plane with pallets of cash for the Iranian mullahs and ayatollahs, and of course, the lifting of sanctions against Iran by the Biden administration. So I think we do have to have some part in this. There's a range of options. I think on the high end of those range of options, we could probably look at a military aerial strike against the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, their headquarters, some of their bases, because the IRGC really is the strong arm of the ayatollahs and the mullahs. The actual Iranian army is more so aligned with the people. And then you could look at also, you know, making sure that they have internet connections by, you know, getting them Starlink. And I think that also maybe you can see how you could supply some means by which these people can defend themselves out on the street, and you can supply weapons to the resistance, which comes back to why it's so important we have a Second Amendment here in the United States of America. And maybe that's why the left does not want us to have a Second Amendment, because they would like to impose their totalitarianism as well. But I think it's important that the West stands up against the mullahs and ayatollahs. They isolate them. You can do that diplomatically. You can do that through, again, increased sanctions, cutting off their supplying of oil. China has to be concerned about this. Russia has to be concerned about this because Iran supplies Russia with those militarized drones that they're using in Ukraine. So what you're seeing is the toppling of another one of these 21st century axes of evil. We've seen Venezuela. Now we can see this in Iran. And I think that it is really concerning to Russia and China.
You know, that's a tremendous point. And you did mention Venezuela. And I find it, again, it's like this same thing where you got to kind of pinch yourself. There has to be a point where your bias or your narrative has to go away for just common sense and decency. President Trump basically pulled out one of the worst dictators in Latino community. He pulls him out. And you see people on The View and stuff, they're praising that the dictator is gone, but they're criticizing the way it's done. So it doesn't matter what he does, the president, in world time situations where it's very easy to see the right thing to do. They push back so hard. Well, yes, he did a good thing, but he did it the wrong way. Like they just, it's nonstop. Even with the situation with Iran, it's the same thing where they're like, yes, we'd like it to be a democracy, but, you know, President Trump shouldn't do it. I don't understand. What do you think the motivation is at this point? I mean, because they can't beat him again. You know, is the plan to try to put these together to go for another impeachment?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, you just heard Chris Murphy, the senator from Connecticut, over the weekend come out and say that Donald Trump has done 10 times more impeachable offenses already in just 1 year than in his entire first term. That's their mantra. This thing called Trump derangement syndrome is very real. Let's just look at what is going on domestically. If you impede and obstruct a law enforcement operation, that's a crime. So why are there people out in the streets that are protesting federal law enforcement who, number one, they're acting in alignment with the Constitution. Number two, they're acting in alignment with federal law, Title 18, U.S. Code 1325, and they're removing criminal illegal immigrants from this country who are killing us, who are raping us, who are raping our kids. I mean, don't they care about Lake and Riley? Don't they care about Jocelyn Ungaré? Don't they care about Rachel Moran from Maryland? No. It is Donald Trump. He is doing something. And where were these voices of impeachment when Joe Biden was out there with an open borders policy? Kamala Harris, Alejandro Mayorkas was out there saying that the border is secure. You have a Democrat member of Congress from Illinois saying that she wants to impeach Kristi Noem. These people are not well. And I think it's so important that the American people realize you can't give them any type of power or control in this country. That's why this election cycle is so important.
Yeah, midterms is going to be on everyone's mind. And I hope that Americans are not lazy, because here's the thing. Trump is not on the ticket, but I believe our future is. And that's an important distinction. And just to piggyback off what you were saying about what was going on in Minnesota, can we run SOT 6? I love this take. Even when he does it right, it doesn't matter what it is. If President Trump is connected to it, it's wrong.
We have had perhaps tens of thousands of people peacefully protesting in the streets. And at the same time, yeah, they are going to stand up for their neighbors. And what we are seeing time and time again is unconstitutional conduct by ICE. ICE is not new. Our separation ordinance in the city is not new. ICE has been around for decades, so has our separation ordinance. What is new is the way that the Trump administration is presently conducting themselves.
What does that even mean? Conducting themselves? What
he
are they?
He doesn't know.
He has no clue.
No, he doesn't. And I think Mayor Jacob Frey needs to read the Constitution, Article 6, Section 2, the Supremacy Clause. When the federal government is operating in pursuance thereof to the rule of law, to the Constitution, they're supreme over any state or local ordinance. And what you see happening now, these are not our neighbors. These are people that are here illegally, and they're committing crimes. and they don't deserve to stay in the United States of America. So what Jacob Frost should be doing is tamping down the rhetoric. He cannot tell ICE to get the you-know-what out of his city because they are enforcing the law. You know, when Joe Biden was breaking the law and allowing people to come into this country legally and do whatever they want, none of these people said anything, and the American people suffered because of it. So if you want something different, then change the law.
But that's the one thing that bothers me is when these woke mayors, they do their interviews and they cite things. But unlike you, who not only cite things, you then back it up with the actual law, your specific thing you're talking about. Why is the media never pushed back when they say it's unconstitutional? It's a very simple thing. Just how so? Please explain it to us, because when I hear them say that, that's their, it's always a blanket term. It's never any specificity. Yeah. And to me kind of tells
it. Because the media is complicit.
Yes.
The media is complicit, and that's why Martha McCallum, when the Seditious Six made that video and she was interviewing one of them, she said, well, what illegal order has he given to the military? And they couldn't answer.
Exactly.
That's what the honest journalism that we need to have.
And I think that's also we need honest political officials. I'm not going to get into conspiracy theories, but I just feel like a lot of what we're seeing, I think there's a lot of connective tissue and in terms of what we saw in Minnesota, and Tim Walz in particular, him becoming the VP didn't make a lot of sense, but it didn't have to make a lot of sense if it made a lot of dollars, if you catch my drift. Because I feel like when we look at this whole thing, he was never really, it was always a strange pick, but I guess if he's got, you know, a couple billion behind him, that is probably was gifted at some point. I personally think he's a patsy in all this. You know, but at some point you got to have some integrity, correct? Or is that even just a
no, you're absolutely right. When you look at Governor Tim Walz, Attorney General Keith Ellison, Representative Ilhan Omar, they have violated their oath to the Constitution. They have violated their social contract to the American people, all for their own personal and political gain. What has happened in Minneapolis with this fraud should not be happening in this country, and people need to be held accountable and responsible for their actions, and hopefully there are consequences.
You know, because they're not going to be able to, and we've seen that. We've seen that America. I said it the other day on TV. I said I've seen America grow up in terms of being not falling for the childish games. What we saw with the unfortunate shooting that happened in Minneapolis, where an officer was forced to draw his firearm to save his life, and typically they were hoping for they were hoping for that George Floyd moment where the entire nation would be turned upside down. But America's eyes have opened up, and we're smarter and wiser than we were before, and their game's not working. So I kind of think about, is this means that maybe this is the end, or are they going to ramp things up?
Well, fool me once, shame on you. Yep. Fool me twice, shame on me. And so, no, I don't think the American people is going to fall for the Marxist leftist line again. Ms. Wood tragically lost her life, but Ms. Wood should not have been in a position where she was interfering, impeding, and obstructing a federal law enforcement operation, which, like I said, again, that is a crime to do so. And her using a vehicle as a weapon, there have been over 100 vehicle related incidents where they tried to use vehicles to attack ICE officers. That has to stop. Has to stop.
You know, and I think the fact that there are actually real life consequences, I think there's almost a, I think the progressive Marxist left has painted this picture or they've deluded the people that follow them, their base, that they've got law enforcement basically has taken a knee, that they are righteous and that they're not going to do anything to you and they can't touch you because you're a citizen. And, you know, and all the, and they give them this horrible misinformation. And you've seen a patience. Law enforcement, especially ICE agents, we have seen a patience. We see them getting screamed in the face. I'm telling you right now, brother, I wouldn't make it. You know, with somebody, you know, just some of the thing. I'm just telling you, I wouldn't make it.
Yeah.
And you know, you see this over, and they continue to roll this footage of them screaming and protesting and stopping, and they're encouraging. But the whole time they're not realizing is that at some point you're going to cross a line. You know, they want to poke the bear because they're under their theory is that the bear is stuck in the zoo. And it's just it's insane to me.
There are consequences to the lawlessness of the left, and they have to accept that and understand that. But it's not just those ICE officers out there. It's their families also.
Oh, yes. No,
because
yes.
When you start to dox, when you're doxing these officers, now you're putting their families at risk. And this is disgusting. It's despicable.
And these are Americans. These are men and women who've taken an oath. And they're you know, like I said, the easiest thing in the world. Don't be mad at them. You know, be mad at your House members who are passing laws and your congressmen. You know, write a bill. You know, do something. You know, all these the leaders that come out, they never have any other solutions. And I think that is what all solutions is. One of my favorite things about you is that you always have a great plan. And I don't, sir. How do we get you back in politics?
Well, you know, sometimes, Tyrus, you can do more outside in informing and educating people and activating people. And, you know, I always tell folks I will follow God's will in my life. I don't try to move the chess pieces of my life around. I just try to be obedient to him.
Well, I hope he moves you towards service, public service again, sir, because you have a voice, a strength, and a knowledge and a wisdom that is greatly needed. And I always am appreciative and thankful that you take time out to come on the show and talk to someone like myself. You've always been very kind to me, and I really appreciate you, and thank you for all your success, and give your family my best.
Absolutely, and God bless you, and thank you, Tyrus, for all that you do. You're an incredible voice and an incredible light in this darkness that's trying to overtake this country in our 250th year of independence.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, boss.
From breaking news to big-name guests, Brian brings you insight you won't hear anywhere else. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, the holidays have come and gone once again, but if you've forgotten to get that special someone in your life a gift, well, Mint Mobile is extending their holiday offer of half off unlimited wireless. So here's the idea. You get it now. You call it an early present for next year. What do you have to lose?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Limited time 50% off regular price for new customers. Upfront payment required. $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12-month plan. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds may slow after 50 gigabytes per month when network is busy. See terms.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Sanctions and other things really haven't worked. What really actually really worked with Iran was the strike, the nuclear facilities. They had 800 pounds of 90% enriched uranium, and they were absolutely committed to build a nuclear bomb. People seem to forget that, you know, and how that changed the entire dynamic in the Middle East after they destroyed their nuclear facilities. And now that helped trigger this kinds of unrest right now in Iran. That could actually create a new nation with this kinds of with these protests. That's why I remain open to these kinds of strikes.
You know what? We don't have, well, Kilmeade has soccer balls, but I wouldn't give them to anyone. But Fetterman gets the game ball. You know, he's just being a responsible leader, and he's using common sense, and he's not putting personal bias. He's doing what's best, and he's supporting the right causes. And I find it absolutely depressing that he is isolated within his own party now for just talking about things rationally and in the American way. So, John Fetterman, thank you for being you. It cannot possibly be easy. It will probably hurt your Democratic political career, but you know what? The Republican water is just fine, or even as an independent. But keep it up, John Fetterman. Enough said.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The
more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Let me get you on record if I can, Mr. Mayor. Do you support abolishing ICE?
I do not support abolishing ICE. However, I absolutely oppose the way that this administration is conducting themselves with ICE. Look, there are a number of entities presently, agencies at the federal government.
But isn't that what your lawsuit is about?
That are conducting themselves. No, you should read the lawsuit. The lawsuit says that, hey, you know, ICE doing ICE stuff is not what we're talking about right now. Again, we've had ICE in our city before. We've had ICE in our state before. It is the fact that, look, right now, there's about 3,000 federal ICE agents in our city between ICE and Border Control. You know how many police officers that we have? 600.
Right.
The kind of duress that our city is experiencing because of this is magnified.
Wow. Magnified. You know what? Speaking of magnified, joining me now to discuss all things politics is Rich Lowry, editor of the National Review. We're also going to talk about his article today about the Iranian Revolution could reverse the debacle of 1979. But before we get into that debacle, let's discuss the debacle that is Minneapolis right now.
Yeah. Hey, pleasure to be with you. I finally made the big time on with Cyrus here. Look, I thought Griff did a great job, don't you? That was a great interview.
Yeah.
And this is basically a low-grade insurgency that we're experiencing in Minneapolis. These aren't legal observers, as they tend to say. This isn't just people protecting their neighbors, as Fry said again on Fox and Friends. These are people obstructing ICE operations and trying to create an atmosphere of violent intimidation that makes it more difficult for them to work, that gets them to, you know, push these guys and arrest them. Then they create the images and distort them and say, look, this is a terrible fascistic force in the city, and it has to stop and undermine it politically. But this is violent, coercive activity with a political goal. They want ICE out of the city. They don't want federal immigration enforcement.
Well, not to mention the theatrics of it. You know, every one of them, they're not protesters. Because one of the things I've noticed when you watch, when you have protests from people that are passionate about stuff, you can actually have an interview, a reporter can talk with them, and they will give you the reasons why they're out there. And it seems it's always, I'm getting paid, and I'm this, I'm that, you know, and it's all anti-Trump. It doesn't matter what it is, what the situation is. This is a perfect example. The federal government's in there for a very good reason. 10 million people nonchalantly just walked into this country for the last, you know, 4 years and the previous administration. Now we're looking at the results of that, not to mention the fact that specific groups came here specifically to fleece America for money. And it just seems so convenient to me that the actions are appropriate. What they're doing is appropriate, but because it came from President Trump, it's wrong.
Yeah, look, think about this in any other context, right? If the goal is to go out and arrest people who are stealing hubcaps, would you say, okay, it's fine to try to de-arrest those people or keep federal law enforcement from doing that because they're our neighbors?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. And a lot of your neighbors are not actually your neighbors. Like, it's just I don't know who's writing for them. If it's if someone who writes a lot of nonfiction love novels, I'm not sure, but it's the same. It's just bland talking points. And to continue that, I mean, listen to this. This is Rob Emanuel. I think it's 34. Roll this one.
I understand resisting the president at all effort, and especially if you're a governor of a blue state where he's doing things like he's doing in Minnesota, what he did in Los Angeles, what he's done in my hometown in Chicago. This is all has nothing to do with public safety, has nothing to do with immigration enforcement. It's about division. And also it leads to horrible situations like what happened in Minneapolis. But there is a resistance, and to me, there's also skating to where the puck will be, which is in 2028, this election will be about fighting for America as much as about fighting against Trump.
I mean, it just doesn't division. He's trying to seed division. He's already won the election. There is, he's won. You can't beat him. You can't get it back. And they still continue. And I feel like even after he's gone, it will still be, well, you know, he's leading from underneath. You know, it's going to be these constant, they just can't ever just tip the cap to him. And
yeah, well, they hate and they fear him and they oppose federal immigration enforcement, root and branch. And Emmanuel there says ICE is creating the situation that we saw last week for Renee Good. She created the situation. She went out of her way to obstruct ICE vehicles. That's a federal crime. She didn't comply with a lawful order, and then she accelerated her car at an ICE officer, right? She created all those situations. I'm not saying she deserved to die. I wish she hadn't. I think it was a great tragedy. But she went out of her way to do that. And what you're saying is this isn't protest. I would add to that point, protest is like you stand on a street corner, you have a bullhorn, and you have your drums. You know, I find it annoying and obnoxious, but there's nothing wrong with that. This is more than that. This is actually obstructing these operations.
You know, and it's they always and then they have great solutions. Let me throw this one at you. Senator Elizabeth Warren, this was the idea.
We need support from rural voters, men, and voters without a college degree. And yes, in 2025, we won back some of these folks, partly because Democratic candidates from every wing of the party ran against Trump's betrayal of working people on affordability issues. But in the long run, to build a strong Democratic Party with a sturdy big tent, it is not enough simply to attack Trump. Democrats need to earn trust.
So it's not Trump. And I'm just going to say affordability, not a word. I refuse to acknowledge it. Like it's just blatant stuff. He's evil and we have to do more than attack him. And they need to earn trust. Well, wouldn't earn trust be by making decisions based on what's best for your constituents? Wouldn't that earn trust? Wouldn't that?
Yeah. So actually, I do think she's right about that. It can't just be about hating and opposing Trump. There has to be something affirmative that people agree with, that the party stands for. But they're consumed with hatred for Trump and just can't see beyond it. And the responsible thing for them to say, from their perspective about ICE, is like, look, we don't like ICE operations. We don't think they should be in this city. We think they're too sweeping. They're not just criminal aliens. But please don't obstruct them. It's dangerous. It's unlawful. Don't do that. You know, write a letter to the editor, stand on a street corner, but don't do that. But they can't bring themselves to do it.
She couldn't bring herself not to attack him in a statement about moving on from attacking him. She had to say he betrayed Trump's betrayal of the working people, you know, and you just did what you said you weren't going to do anymore. So we can't trust you.
Exactly.
You can't even. I mean, it's just like you just can't help yourself. And it's just unbelievable. Now, I want to shift gears because I'm very interested in your article where you talk about Iran's revolution could reverse the debacle of 1979. And I think a lot of people try to use situations in the past that haven't necessarily worked out as an excuse not to try to do the right thing in this situation.
Yeah. Now, look, this could go desperately wrong, right? There could be civil war. There could be a failed state. Those are all potentials. But this is one of the worst anti-American regimes on earth that has American blood on their hands. So if there's any situation where you want to roll the dice and say, let's take whatever is behind, you know, door number three and isn't this, I think it would be this situation. And Trump hates this regime. He understands what they're about. His maximum pressure campaign has had, I think, a big role in creating the predicate for what's happening on the streets there and the Midnight Hammer strikes. And I think he's probably going to do more. You know, he certainly sounds like he's going to do more. So who knows what's going to come of it or whether the revolution will succeed and what will come after. But if this regime falls, it would be a very good thing and a massive feather in Trump's hat.
Yeah, you know, and I think the problem is that they're upset by the fact that, I mean, I guess I'm throwing some shade here at Warren, but a feather in his hat. I think the president has a pretty good headdress right now in terms of of what he's got going on. And he's basically coming from a thing where he understands that we crippled Iran's nuclear program and their military to a certain extent. And the unrest and the opportunity, the people took that opportunity to stand up and fight. This decision of the president has inspired a nation to want more. Mm-hmm. So you can't just say not our problem. Now, listen, I'm all for America first. I get it. But this, in a way, is America first. This is sending the message to the world that we are there for the right reasons. We shouldn't just always be in situations. We shouldn't maybe have to a country pay us to protect their assets. But when an actual real humanitarian crisis is happening, when a group of people are actually being attacked for their belief system, not made up Harvard stuff, you can't walk away from it. You know, the United States can't walk away from it. And we have the technology and the military to be able to do it with risking minimal American soldiers' lives. And I get it. I'm the last one to tell a man to go do what he has to do, but there is a reason why these brave men and women signed up and took an oath to do what they do. So let them do what they do.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I mean, we're not talking about another Iraq war, 150,000 guys trying to occupy Iran. That's not going to happen. That's just not in the cards. What we're talking about is cyber operations, information operations, and perhaps some kind of standoff attacks, you know, blowing up the Ministry of the Interior, whatever it is, which, as you say, very, very low risk military operations. So I think it's in the cards, but we'll see.
Now, on the world stage, because, you know, Iran, Russia, China, North Korea, Venezuela, the more I kind of sit back and just observe, I think that's something that a lot of people supposedly in the media should maybe start doing, is instead of running your mouth in your little panel, sit back and observe and come back with an educated, common sense, response. But it seems to me that this is all connected. Venezuela, it was basically a hub for China, Russia, Iran. Mm-hmm. And he cut the head off the snake forcefully. And now you have China's nervous, Russia's nervous. He's cutting the heads off because it's like a hydra. It's a lot of heads and tentacles that goes into what has been going down on this with the what we see with the drug trade, with human trafficking, with domestic and foreign terrorists and stuff. They're all connected. So what's happening in Iran and what's happening to Venezuela, I think, is a great display of showing a lot of the wrongdoers on this planet that this is not the America that you got comfortable with 4 years ago.
Yeah, look, taking out Maduro, huge. We don't know where Venezuela is ultimately going to head. But then if the Iranian regime goes down, too, that would just be amazing and a setback to our enemies. So America first doesn't begin and end on our own shores. What happens here is obviously extremely important. But what happens abroad also affects our safety and our security and our interests. So to take down this regime would be a boon, I believe, to our national interests.
And I'm going to play this real quick. President Trump had a message to the leaders of Iran. You got to like his style.
Mr. President, on Iran, do you have a message for the leaders currently of Iran?
Yeah, the message is they've got to show humanity. They've got a big problem. And I hope they're not going to be killing people. And I'm going to have a report very soon. It would seem to me that they have been badly misbehaving, but that is not confirmed.
He's letting you know that he's on it. And I think, how do you argue with the whole point of the left is about the people? Well, here's a group of people who are being, and there's reports they're being hanged, shot in the streets for, standing up for democracy. So how do you square, having an opposition to that? And I think his answer was a very, we'll wait and see, but we are watching. I don't have an issue with that type of response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, it has been confirmed. We're getting these horrific numbers, you know, more than 10,000 people slaughtered. But it's very notable, right? Where are the campus protests? You know, you're nice Muslim people getting killed. Aren't they really concerned about that?
And it's shocking to me. Because, where is it?
Yeah, because it doesn't involve being anti-U.S. or anti-Israel, and that's what those protesters ultimately motivates them. So they don't care one way or the other, and may even be favorable to the regime because it's the anti-U.S. regime.
Yeah, some of the, like I said, and going down the summer of, I don't even want to call it love, but when you had things like, you know, you had groups like Queers for Palestine, and you had like just some of the crazy, that'd be like chickens, yeah. Hens for Chick-fil-A. Yeah. You know, it's right, like, it's just, and you try to get your head around, like, this doesn't make sense. Like, where are you getting the information from? And I think that's the thing that we need to find in the coming months. And I think it will come out. I think we'll start to see where the connective tissue is with all the misinformation and the funding. Because a lot of the stuff we're seeing, and one of the things that I was seeing 40-year-old weird, men and women in these college campuses protest. And I'm like, I don't even think they went to the school, and a lot of them, and like 60% of them didn't. It was like some crazy number. They were just busing in from different places. And it's just, when you have to manufacture anger and hate and shock and virtue signal, when there's an actual situation that could use a little virtue, they're just nowhere to be found.
Nowhere to be found. Yep, because it's not transgressive. It's not anti-Western. It's not anti-American. It's not anti-Israel. So they're not interested.
And that to me is, I think, should open everyone's eyes to what's really going on in the country. Hey, Rich, thanks so much for coming in today.
It
was a lot of fun. Appreciate you. We have to do this again soon. And where can people reach you if they want to check you out?
NationReview.com.
All right. Have a good day, boss.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm irritated that we have to be here at all. But girls around the country continue to face at the hands of I hate to make it partisan in this way, but Democratic elected officials and institutions who continue to push along that agenda. It is not inclusive. It is exclusive to the very girls, the very female athletes who the women's sporting category was created to protect and to honor.
Yeah, you know what? Irritating is a polite word. I think Riley Gaines hits the nail on the head on that one. This really is never should have been an issue at any times. And it has nothing to do with, in my opinion, it has nothing to do with protecting a group. These are young men, individuals, 99% of the time. And typically it didn't work out one way. And then suddenly they put hair on a ponytail and they compete. And now whether it's their journey or whatever, unfortunately, men and women are different. And I always say that the same thing. There's a reason why we are designed the way we are designed. And you cannot cross those things over. And it's absolutely sad that we have the type of people who push the type of woke garbage. Boys and girls are different. They shouldn't play together. In sports and competitive sports, there's a reason for that. And we should protect our girls at all costs. This is Tyrus filling in for Brian Kilmeade on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
What it is, Tyrus filling in for the missing in action Brian Kilmeade today. And I'm very excited to talk with my next guest, the Reagan Charleston. She's an attorney from New Orleans, but she's also a reality TV superstar. She's a mother, and she's my wife's best friend. So a lot of hats you wear. And I want to get, first of all, how are you? How's everything?
I am surviving after the holidays, but we're good. I see Georgie's book. That's so exciting.
Yes. Yes, it is. As a horse dad, my hustle is on full extent. I got my new book out. I got her book out. So, and
I see yours too.
Yeah. So it's a lot of things going on trying to, that horse dad life because, we just picked up Jigsaw. So, I don't need to retire for another year or 10. So, but,
no.
No.
Those horses are going to keep you working, but y'all are an impressive family. I'm so proud of Georgie.
Oh, yeah, she's doing it amazing right now. And, although your daughter is still the queen of the lemon face. So a lot of people don't know my daughter and her daughter were seeing who could eat lemons without making a sour face. And it got pretty intense there. So it's nice for kids to be kids and little girls to be little girls. And unfortunately, talking about home life and family life, we got to segue into I can't wait to get your expertise on what's been going on with the Supreme Court and women's sports. And I want to play a montage for you and get your thoughts on this. And you can maybe walk us through this a little bit, trying to make sense of it and try to understand it. Okay, so let's roll that montage.
These cases are about whether right-wing MAGA Republicans get to decide who belongs in society and who does not belong in society.
We have a duty as decent human beings to recognize that trans lives exist. Did you hear me, Secretary McMahon? You will not speak louder or speak over me or over these people.
No offense to Coach Tuberville, but I don't want him deciding who's a girl. I don't want to show him my private parts.
Yeah. I don't think anyone is trying to deny that trans people exist. That's not the issue. And it's not society. It's a very specific thing. Women's competitive sports. You have an unfair advantage because whether you like it or not, you were born with male biology, which means you have skeletal and muscular advantages. Women have different advantages too. You guys are smarter than us. Okay, you can do multitask. We're more one dimensional. And unfortunately, we got the brawns and you got the brain. So it's like, this to me, we should not even be having this conversation, correct? This should not be at the Supreme Court. Do you agree?
Well, I think with the hysteria surrounding, I think that a Supreme Court decision will be helpful. Do I think that will stop the hysteria? No, I don't. At the end of the day, yes, there are biological differences. I'm a lawyer. I'm not a medical professional.
Right.
But I do have a daughter and I have a son. And I can tell you that my son at 4 years old is denser, stronger, faster than my six-year-old daughter. This is pre-puberty.
Yeah.
And these two cases that we're looking at involve transgender girls, women, that have had hormone therapy, right? And especially with Becky Pepper Jackson, she had prepubescent hormone therapy. Like I said, I'm not a medical professional. I do not think that that changes the fact at all of what we're looking at here, and that there are distinct biological differences between people who are born as a male and later transition and biological females.
You know, and you are correct. And I'm not a doctor either, not pretending to be one, but I also feel like this is not necessarily something that needs to go to a medical review board on Bay Very. And here's the thing. You want to go to the experts and then you get little carrots like this one right here. Let me tell you a flashback from Justice Brown Jackson. Check this out.
Can you provide a definition for the word woman?
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
I can't.
You can't?
Not in this context.
So
I'm not a biologist.
The meaning of the word woman is so unclear and controversial that you can't give me a definition?
So when you hear, that's the mindset, is that you can't define anything. But they certainly can define things they disagree with. You know, and this
right. And
go ahead.
Well, yesterday, for instance, you know, I forget which justice it was, but was questioning the ACLU attorney and said, can you define sex? What is sex? And he refused to answer. And then even afterwards in interviews, he would not commit to an answer on what is sex, define sex. And that's a key issue here. And the two laws that were enacted in Idaho and then in West Virginia, they protect women in sports. That is permissible under Title IX. I do not think that like I said earlier, the hysteria surrounding this, it's not that complicated of an issue. While it is obviously controversial at the time, I don't think that the court is going to have a difficult job in articulating why these state laws are permissible under the 14th Amendment and also Title IX provisions. I do not think they're going to punt this. I don't think that they'll remand it back to the lower courts. I do think they'll issue a decision based upon the questions asked in oral argument yesterday. The bench seems inclined to rule in favor of states. But it does seem that it will be very narrowly tailored, which if you ask anyone on the students' side, right, that this is going to be far-reaching. There are going to be tremendous consequences that involve bathrooms and locker rooms and, I mean, run the gamut, right? The court is making clear that they really want to limit the application of whatever the ruling is to sports.
Yes.
And, you know, that's where we're at, and I think it's a very cut-and-dry decision.
You know, and it's Brett Kavanaugh I thought he made a pretty strong point. If we could roll that for you.
Obviously, one of the great successes in America over the last 50 years has been the growth of women and girls sports. Some states in the federal government and the NCAA and the Olympic Committee think that allowing transgender women and girls to participate will undermine or reverse that amazing success. For the individual girl who does not make the team, or doesn't get on the stand for the medal, or doesn't make all league, there's a harm there.
I think you and him are kind of on the same page on this. And I think it's important that there is harm being done, and it is to young girls. Scholarships being lost, opportunities being lost, or the fear of even trying out. You know, it's a lot of things, but you're 1,000% correct in the sense that it needs to be focused on women's sports because it's a simple answer. And then I guess you can make the argument, well, then they have nowhere else to turn. That's not true. They can play in boys' sports. They can play in young men's sports. And there's absolutely no problem in that. So that's why I'm always kind of leery because there is an opportunity. The difference is that they will be on the same level playing field. So if they dominate, let's say in soccer, and a boy who transitions to a little girl and plays on a boy soccer team, he's not going to have the extra edge. He's not. Whereas if he went to the women's soccer league, he would have a tremendous edge. So I think that's pretty cut and dry.
And, you know, I do want to recognize that this is difficult, you know, for the students that are involved in this impact, but it is a small number of students. And should the states be barred from enacting legislation like this, the impacts are much farther reaching. And, you know, as it relates to biological women in sports, and I certainly sympathize with the parents and with Ms. Heacox and Becky, but it's a very difficult road to go down where you would have to force states and schools to act as essentially a medical review panel and look at these specific factual situations, how much testosterone is free floating. And, you know, it just seems like we need to allow the states to enact this legislation, and whether, you know, they are ultimately allowed to play in their state or would have to go somewhere else to play, you know, that remains to be seen. But I think that these laws are indeed constitutional, and I think that that's what the court will ultimately find. And I also think it's important to note that we had a really, you know, great ruling out of the Supreme Court that protected gay and trans employees in the workplace. So this was in 2020. So we're not in a day and age where trans people are being just completely discriminated against. There are significant protections. I think this is limited to the situation where you have young women trying to excel in athletes and academic scenarios, and they have to be protected, and there have to be fair rules. And what's, you know, fair for just a few is not fair for the majority, and that's a very difficult place to be.
Well, the defense rests, Your Honor. That was, I can't even comment. That was well done, well said, well put. And I guess maybe that's what we're missing, is just having someone come out and just say it without adding their own personal issues or narratives, because this was something that I think never should have gotten this out of control. But speaking of out of control, I want to play one more for you. Keith Ellison in Minneapolis announcing the lawsuit to end the surge of DHS agents in the state.
We're here to announce a lawsuit we're filing against the United States Department of Homeland Security to end the unlawful, unprecedented surge of the federal law enforcement agents into Minnesota, because this has to stop. And we ask that the courts will end the surge of thousands of DHS agents into Minnesota. We ask the courts to end the DHS unlawful behavior in our state, the intimidation, the threats, the violence.
And let me just keep it. Let's keep this party going so you can get both sides of it. Can we roll number 8, Ellie Hong? Can we do that one?
I've read both the Minnesota and Illinois lawsuits. They're really political diatribes masquerading as lawsuits. If you look at what both states are asking the courts to do, it's to kick ICE out of those states and cities and to bar ICE from carrying on federal law enforcement in Illinois and Minnesota. That's the top thing both states asked to do, and they cite zero precedent for that. There is zero precedent for that. There is no way a judge can say, you federal law enforcement agency, you are not allowed to execute federal law in a certain state or city. You also could have judges that issue sort of symbolic orders along the lines of, ICE, you are not to violate the law, but that's already the case. It's already not allowed for ICE to violate the law. So these lawsuits, which appear to be coordinated, they're potentially powerful political statements, but I don't give them much of a chance of achieving the legal thing that they're asking for in the courts.
Now, you've seen both sides of it. What is your take on this?
This is another very controversial issue right now. And I'm a lawyer, right? And I see things from all sides. And I talk to people all day about these issues. And I certainly sympathize with people that feel scared. But I think it, like I said earlier, I think things are blown out of proportion. These are federal agents doing their job. And I think that what we saw with the Renee Good situation that has come to a head over the last few days, and it seems like it's just going to get worse. When you have groups of people that are showing up and they're actively protesting and it's getting heated, that is naturally a situation where problems arise. And for anyone to act surprised when you show up and you protest and you engage with any kind of federal agent in the middle of an active investigation, an active raid, you would have to expect that there is a certain possibility that something could go sideways. I think the activists, and activism is great, you know, protests, go for it. But to be so aggressive with the agents, it's a very difficult place to argue from. And I think what's gotten me the most, and I've sat back and I thought about this, is that I think we'd be seeing a very different perspective from the media if this had been two young black men and not two white women. And I think that was the thing that immediately jumped out at me, is that, it was a very different perspective there. It's difficult, but legally the question, really is, did the officer act reasonably under the circumstances, what was happening in that moment? And I don't know that there's enough evidence, or there's certainly a lot of video out. Both sides can argue, but at the end of the day, these are federal agents doing their job. And from what I understand, they were there trying to capture a man who is a sex offender. You know, they're not going in against women and children in this, instance. It was potentially a violent sex offending criminal. And I think we can all agree that those people, should be picked up, but also due process is important. So all of these things kind of swarm in this very controversial discussion right now.
Yeah, the great Scott Adams passed yesterday, but he had one of his most favorite lines, and I think I've already said it once today, but it's two movies on one screen is what is happening. And I think the difference, had it been two young black men in that car, I think we wouldn't have had, I think the left would have had more to fire with in terms of, like, they would make it all about racism, and, it's what they wanted. And this one's tough for them in the sense that they're saying white people are the problem, and they're the oppressors, and we're on stolen land, and they say all these things horrible about white people, and then here's a situation where something bad had happened. Although, again, you choose to make those choices, you get real life consequences. But you don't. America, I think, has gone through so much that the average person now is taking the extra second before they react. And I think that's what's the difference is necessarily in this one, is that people are, like you said, let's let due process fill out. Let's have the investigation. Let's keep an open mind. Let's see what happens. And I think that's the best way. And again, you never ever disappoint. I always come to you so much for about legal questions and stuff. You should probably start asking me for a retainer. But I appreciate you so much for coming on today. And best of luck to you. And happy New Year.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Happy New Year.
And that was just an amazing, amazing conversation. And it's true.
Where big stories meet bigger conversations. Stay informed and energized with the Brian Kilmeade Show. That makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What it is, this is Tyrus filling in for the great Brian Kilmeade on the Brian Kilmeade Radio Show. And of course, you know, if you're enjoying this time with Tyrus, then you should probably want to get more time with Tyrus. And that brings in the Planet Tyrus Comedy Tour. January 16th and 17th, I'll be at West Palm Beach, Florida. So that's literally the time's ticking away. January 3rd is Melbourne, Florida. January 31st is Venice, Florida. February 24th, Cadillac, Michigan. I will also be all over Red Bluff, California, Grass Valley, Santa Clarita, Escondido, Farmington. I will be everywhere. That, again, you can get tickets at...
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This kind of lawlessness. I saw another video of 50 agents going into a public library to get one person. I don't even know the circumstances of that person. The violence, the complete impunity with which these agents are operating, despite court orders in many cases that have said this is unlawful, you cannot do this. We need to make sure everybody has an arrest warrant before somebody is picked up. We need to make sure that these people are not masked. We need to make sure that there is real accountability in these, in all of these investigations.
Well, boy, she just said a mouthful. Joining me now is a very good friend of mine. He was a mentor in my time in the WWE, and he is just doing a tremendous job. Mayor Glenn Jacobs, and of course, you know, he's a Hall of Fame professional wrestler, and he's working on a Hall of Fame mural. I think I'm very, very excited to have you here today. And just what I really want to talk about is Heroes Hill. But I got you here as a mayor, I got to ask your take. When you hear some of the things that are coming out of what's going on in Minnesota and Minneapolis, as a mayor, it's got to be a little uncomfortable for you, I would think.
Well, thanks for having me on. First of all, big man, I really appreciate it as always. Last night, I was at an event in Nashville. We just kicked off a legislature, just open session. And they had the Tennessee Chamber of Commerce had their big reception. So you had the legislators there. Just everybody is at this thing. You also had about 200 people outside waving signs, cursing, screaming, blowing whistles in your ear, calling everyone that walked in a Nazi, you know, F ICE, blah, 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 blah. And to me, it's like, okay, what are y'all trying to accomplish here?
Right.
What are you doing? You know, I mean, because, okay, we politicians, we're kind of used to it. But you also had a lot of normal, everyday, average people, just business folks or whatever, walking through this. What are you trying to accomplish? I remember a few years ago, I was at the Right to Life March here in Knoxville, and that was right after Roe v. Wade was overturned. And so inside the room where we're having the meeting to discuss the march and everything, people were just nice, polite, you know, just people you want to hang out with.
Right.
Outside the room, you have people screaming, cussing, throwing a fit, twerking, doing all this crazy, weird stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, even if I didn't politically agree with the folks in the room, there's no way I would want to be hanging out with the people outside the room because they're an embarrassment, you know. And all we see now from the left is just this manufactured outrage. This doesn't have anything really to do with ICE. This doesn't have anything to do with immigration policy. This has to do with I hate Donald Trump.
1,000%.
Everybody, every Republican is a Nazi. You know, and I guess one of the things that really bothers me about all this is, you know, I try to find common ground with people. I try to talk with folks. How can you have a dialogue with someone, you know, when you have a legitimate difference of opinion? And I can justify mine policy wise, but everything starts with you're a Nazi and I hate you.
Yeah, I mean, you just and I this was something that, you know, when I was younger dealing with arguments with people and you're exchanging ideas. And, you know, with me, it would be like, oh, they dropped the N-bomb, or they'd be saying, oh, you big dumb jock, or you meet. And as soon as as soon as that happens, and now it's, of course, you know, I'm, you know, I'm Uncle Tom, or I'm part of the, you know, the royal family of President Trump, whatever the insult is. But once that happens, there's that always told me one thing. You have no argument.
Right.
That's you yell and scream. It's the same thing. When you catch somebody in a lie and they start screaming and yelling at you because you caught them, it's because they have no argument. And I think that's the disappointing thing. But you expect more from leadership. You expect more, you know, as a mayor, when something like that happens, and I get, and this is the third time today I'm going to make another Scott Adams reference, but we are seeing two movies on one screen, but at some point, there has to be someone to be like, hey, this one, they're right. But you're 1,000%. It's whatever Trump is doing. They want a group that they want to fight and march for. People in Iran are going through some really horrible things right now, but we don't see that because you know why? It doesn't fit the narrative because it's a little hard to see a Nazi helping a country of brown people. Like, it's just, it's shocking to me that there it is all manufactured because none of it is genuine.
We even look at the statistics, you know, the deportation statistics under Trump compared to former presidents. They're not like
it's
this,
not a big thing. Obama, he was running everybody out, and he didn't have 10 million plus people, and some numbers even more that just showed up.
Yeah,
so it's
there were more deportations under Obama than there have been under Trump. You know, but you didn't see the left out there screaming and yelling, oh my gosh, you're depriving these people, you know, of their rights. You know, it was just, oh, since our guy's doing it, it's perfectly okay, you know, but when someone else enforces the law, then all of a sudden that becomes a big problem. And you're exactly right. You know, the left has weaponized immigration. And it's gone from, you know, one of my favorite things is I get to do naturalization ceremonies. And you see these people who've come here, worked really hard to become American citizens, want to be productive people, want to contribute to our society, want to chase the American dream. You know, that's beautiful. Instead, what the left has done is they just, hey, just come on in. You get free stuff. You know, it's even better if you belong to Trinidad, Aragua, and, you know, destabilize our cities and those sort of things. And it, again, they've weaponized everything. They've politicized everything. And it all comes down to, if you ain't on my side, I hate you. Their arguments, as you say, are intellectually bankrupt because they can't justify anything they say. All they want to do is scream and yell and call you names.
Well, the only justification is you're evil. You're terrible. And then when you, here's the thing, and I've been in some situations where I said, how so? Like, what is it about what I'm saying that is so terrible? And it's always the same thing. It's because you're a man, you know, it's because you're this or you're that, or you've bought it. It's just be whatever it is Trump did. I'm a guest. Make it easy for all of us. So we don't even have to waste time interviewing and asking. We get it. Because even when he does well, I think one of the things that just made me absolutely, and I hate referencing The View because Gutfeld's obsessed with him. But when you have, and I don't like to give any of them recognition, so I never mention their names, but I think it was Navarro that was talking about how excited and happy, and she cried tears of joy that Moderna was up out of there. But it was the way it was done that she just can't sit right with, you know. So the thing is not that the America did the American military showed why they're number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and liberated and took a bad person, a bad actor out, and they still can't give it to him because he didn't do it. He didn't do it with their permission and their blood. Like, they just find, it doesn't matter what it is. It's literally like dealing with a bitter ex-wife at this point. It doesn't matter what you've done. You pay support on time. You drop the kids off on time. You still did something wrong.
Well, I don't.
Yeah.
Lord, that's just, well, that's a nightmare scenario. You just somehow said that we were married to the women on the field.
No, no, I said ex-wife. No. I wouldn't. Listen, I'm upset enough at you over the whole refusing to recognize Die Hard as a Christmas movie, but man. I would never, no matter how bad that feud goes between us, I would never wish that upon you or myself. But I'm just, in the terms of just good form, I'm just saying that no matter what happens, when you have a bitter ex, or a person that is against you fundamentally, when you do something for the good of the betterment of humanity, they still will say, well,
it doesn't matter because you're a bad person.
You're a bad person. And you know what? I want to switch gears. I want to make sure we have more than enough time. Operation Hero Hill, from service to shelter. Let's get into this. Let's talk about this.
Yeah, and thank you so much for bringing this up. So Operation Heroes Hill, it's an idea that's been percolating in my head for a while. I'm friends with the folks at Nine Line. They do the apparel. You'll see their T-shirts. It's got the soldier rappelling out of the helicopter. They're a veteran-owned company, and they've done these tiny homes for veterans, homeless veterans. They have a couple of these in Georgia and South Carolina. So it's like, man, wouldn't it be cool if we could do that? I actually had one of our home builders here was talking about how they wanted to incorporate high school students into building tiny homes for homeless folks. And I'm like, why don't we do it for homeless veterans? And, it's just a good thing all the way around. We can address some of the issues with homelessness, and especially with our veteran community, as well as get our young people interested in the skilled trades. Yeah, construction, So what Operation Heroes Hill will do is it's going to create a community of 20 tiny homes for veterans who are having a hard time finding housing, as well as the wraparound services. It'll actually, the VA in the end will actually manage the facility. One of the things that's really cool about it, though, is these homes are being built at our high schools. So you have high school students building the homes with mentors from industry. Then eventually, once we're ready to go, and we're getting there, we're actually going to break ground on the project in February. Once everything's laid out, we just move the homes in. Then we have all the utilities stubbed up. All that work will be done, hopefully, by late spring, early summer. Everything will be ready to go. And I'd like to cut a ribbon on this thing in August or so. So it's just and the community support has been unbelievable. I mean, just from not only the builders and industry, but just everybody. And one of the cool things that we're doing here too is, we're journaling everything. And we're just basically chronicling all of this because project like this, there's a lot of moving parts, and we've had some hiccups. We didn't know this, didn't know that, probably made a mistake here or there that we had to fix.
Right.
And as you know, often the most important thing when you're modeling something that someone else has done is don't do that. It's actually understanding some mistakes that have been made. Yeah. But I have a great team, and we've been able to overcome all that. But we're basically putting it all together. And if someone else wants to do something like this, and we have been approached by other area counties, we've got the playbook. And here it is. This is how you do it. So I'm just really, really excited about it.
Because you guys have, it's a small number, but it could be 140 veterans are experiencing homelessness in Knox County. And, some people would say, well, it's only 140, but you take 140 in every county in this country.
Yeah.
It's a big.
But it's also 140 people that serve this country. So
yes. It's a caveat to where this is. If we are able to provide this service for veterans who are going through some hard times, you want to see it spread. So if you do have the playbook, it's not about having. This isn't a money making thing. This is a human being thing, and you're gonna want. And I want to see it expand. And we should have communities like this for our veterans in every county in this country. I think it's one of the ugly stains that our veterans, when they're done serving, we don't have more for them when they come home. And and not just services, opportunities, dignity, you know, respect. I mean, there's a million things. And luckily, we have the administration that is 1,000% in support of veterans. And we're seeing some overhauls, and we want to see better hospitals. We want to see, you know, we should invest. You know, we just watched $9 billion just get fleeced from, in Minnesota. If you would have gave us just a quarter of that, a tenth of that, there could be tiny homes everywhere, giving our soldiers, our men and women who serve, the help they need, and at the same time, dignity. And we will be giving our young generation some dirt under their nails, a trade, without a huge college debt, and something to be proud of. You know, we don't have to send them to Calcutta to build, you know, huts and all that stuff. We have stuff right here in America. And this, I think, is exactly what we need to focus on. And this is something that I think everyone can get behind. And I would challenge other mayors, and you don't have to be in politics to use your platform, you know, use your platform to get there, start helping out on the boots on the ground. If you want, if you need something to get passionate about, if you need something to protest about, you need something to get in there. And this would be this group would be the perfect group. And here's the thing, you will get results from your participation in this, because this is a positive thing, and I am just super excited. And then, of course, let me get this out there for more information on this for the people at home who are listening and watching. Operations Heroes Hill at knoxcounty.org. So if you want to help, if you want information, if you want to bring it to your city, this I 1,000% stand behind this, and I think, and I'm going to see what I can do in my little city of Wellington, and just start getting this. Let's make this a movement.
Yeah, and seriously, anyone that wants any more information, wants to help, please reach out to us. As you said, you brought up a very important point. You know, when we started this segment, we talked about just how separated we are.
Yes.
And this has brought people that maybe I wouldn't have worked with otherwise to the table. And the amazing thing is then, you know, you find out, actually, I'm not a bad guy. They're not a bad guy. We probably have difference of opinions on some things, but we can work together on this. And that's at least a start to some constructive dialogue, big picture, right? So, you know, and as you point out, about studies show that about a quarter of the homeless population around our country is actually veterans. And to me, that's just a travesty. You know, my dad served 21 years when he came out of the military. We were okay, but you know, he had some struggles adjusting to civilian life just because his skill set. He worked on aircrafts. You know, he was on aircraft carrier in the Navy. Then he was a loadmaster on the C-130s in the Air Force, you know, and where we live, just there wasn't an airport. It didn't have cargo planes, those sort of things. You know, so he kind of had, it took him a few years to really get his feet under him as far as, you know, his career going forward. But we were fortunate too, just because he was able to overcome that. A lot of our veterans, just when they get out, you know, whether it's PTSD, whether it's other issues, or whether it is that, you know, just not being able to retool, it just causes just problems.
Well, this is a great
anything
cause
we can do to help.
Yes.
I think it's actually, you know, these people served us. We need to serve them.
Right. And I will be posting this stuff on my social media for information. And we're out of time. I've milked it so we get as much time we can in this conversation. Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor. Look forward to debating you about Die Hard real soon.
Sounds good. Have a great one. Thanks.
Yes, sir, boss.
From breaking news to big name guests, Brian brings you insight you won't hear anywhere else. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
These people are pathetic. Republicans have had all year, literally. Donald Trump lied to the American people and said that costs will go down on day one. Costs haven't gone down in the United States of America. Costs are out of control. It's all talk. There's no action. These people are not serious.
What do you mean, these people, Hakeem? Hakeem Jeffries, you're one of the guys that I've actually thought had common sense and could represent the Democratic Party as it used to be. But when you are so wrapped up to say with a straight face that this administration is all talk, President Trump, I don't think he's slept more than 3 hours since he's got in. He's literally saving the world, fixing the economy, making our seats straight again. Yeah, our streets safe again. Yeah, good one. That was hilarious. I thought I was a comedian. Nice job, Hakeem.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
What it is, this is Tyrus in for Brian Kilmeade today on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Always excited to be here, and I have my accoutrement of stuff with me. I got my two new books. Well, last one's actually my daughter. And I've had a lot of cool guests, and I'm really excited. From the very first time I even started watching politics as a young man trying to figure out if this was a game I wanted to get into, one of the stoic, straight-up, no BS politicians that I always had a tremendous amount of respect for is joining us today, and that is the great Karl Rowe. Sir, always a pleasure. Former Deputy Chief of Staff and Senior Advisor to President George W. Bush and Fox News contributor. I actually share a job title with you, which is kind of cool. Obviously, I'm sure it's a different pay scale. But, you know...
yeah, Tyrus, I've never hosted Kilmeade. So you have done something that I have for year after year after year hoped for to be considered, and you're the man in the chair today. I mean, what does that say?
Oh, sir, your sarcasm, it's phenomenal.
No, but, not sarcasm, man. It's praise. Praise.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, I want to get into your predictions because I'm with you on a couple of them, but your last one, we've got to sit down and discuss. But before we do, I would be remiss and completely not doing my job if I did not hit you to get some of your wisdom and advice on current political situations. Fellas, please roll number 32.
There's so much going on overseas. Understandably, a lot of your focus has been on other countries. But when I talk to Americans, when I talk to your own voters, they want your focus to be on them, and they feel like it may be drifting. What do you have to say to them?
Well, Tony, we have the strongest economy maybe in the history of our country. Our growth numbers are through the roof. Our job numbers are tremendous. We have the highest stock market we've ever had. Today, we hit every day for the last, I think, 48 times out of 11 months. 48 days out of 11 months. We've had the number one stock market in the history of our country. So my big focus is here. But you can't be forgetting about bad threats. All of that is for the good of this country. So my focus is very much on this country. But you can't lose sight of the fact that we need peace all over the world.
So he's basically put it in a microcosm. Now, you can spread yourself too thin. I think that is...
Yeah.
I guess that is a concern, but I would push back a little bit. He is doing all these things with probably the greatest opposition, I think, and at least in modern times, that a president has faced with basically every decision he's made. Literally half the country has a problem with it.
Yeah. Well, yes. And look, we can get into, is this worse than Lyndon Johnson at the height of the Vietnam War? Or, you know, is this worse than Jimmy Carter at the, you know, with the Iranian hostage crisis and, you know, with double digit inflation, double digit interest rates, double digit unemployment? But the amazing thing to me is how much activity has happened in just less than a year. And also how I wonder why the administration hasn't taken victory laps more. I live in Texas. I'm coming to you today from Austin, Texas. The border is secure.
Yes.
And the president has never visited the border. If he came to the border, it would draw the nation's attention to it. He'd be surrounded by Democratic sheriffs and Democratic mayors. And we're down here that we call the county executive, the county judge. So he'd be surrounded by Democrat elected officials, many of them Hispanic, saying, thank you, Mr. President, for stopping this flood that was destroying our communities. And yet he hasn't done it. And Yeah, but you're right. I mean, there's lots of things happening now of great consequence. We're at the beginning of some of them, whether it's Venezuela or Iran, and it's going to be really important for our country to have these things play out to our advantage.
You know, you make such a great point, and it's something. Do you think that the president or the administration kind of is playing into the hands of the opposition, of the extreme left, by not ever take moments to show people results? Because that is such a great point, because we haven't really seen, we see things get done and then boom, it's right into another opposition, or boom, another explosive situation. So they're really, this administration has not taken time to smell the roses, and some people are like, well, that's a good thing. No, it's not, because you have to let the people know who are supporting you that things are getting done, and the country, it does not look like the image that's being portrayed on mainstream media.
I think that's right. And look, there's one other thing that goes in combination with that. The president's speech yesterday heralded a strong economy. Now, we got plenty of things in the economy that are problematic, and people don't feel good about the economy. So you got to be careful about the tone. Right. But one of the interesting things was that people do feel concerned about prices, because inflation drove prices up. Our wages haven't kept up with them. And people are, trying to take the family out to dinner, or trying to plan a vacation, or thinking about a household purchase. And they're looking at this and getting sticker shock.
Yeah.
And the Democrats are making an issue of this, affordability. The president talked about that in Detroit, but he dismissed affordability as a hoax at the same time that he's saying, I'm going to make things, affordable for you. You can't have it both ways. Better for him to if he is really going to put an emphasis on, I'm going to make an economy strong enough so that you feel prosperous and secure, then he ought to stop talking, dismissing the affordability issue as a hoax.
You know, because that's I think sometimes the best, and with this administration, you can get some straight talk to say, is to understand that the effects of the previous administration, it's going to take a lot more work and time in a year to get it done. I think you have to remind them where we're coming from. And at the same time, you have to understand that you are doing this with all the movements or all the decisions or policies that a president is trying to enact. He's going, every one of them is going to have 99% opposition from the Democratic Party, from the Senate, from the House. No matter what he does, it's because it's him.
Right.
It's not the thing. And you make this will get into those predictions, because one of your predictions, and I hate that I agree with you, is that we probably might have a split Congress.
Yeah. The Republicans, look, it's the second midterm election. And that's not the best time for any administration. And midterm elections are tough. If you go back to, the modern history of our country, since World War II, there have only been two midterm elections where the White House party gained seats in the midterm election. 1998, Bill Clinton, the Republicans had overreached on the issue of impeachment, and the Democrats picked up a modest number of seats. 2002, George W. Bush's approval rating is in the 60s, like Bill Clinton's was in 1998. And Republicans pick up seats in the House. But otherwise, the White House party loses seats in the House of Representatives. And with the margin that we have today, it's going to be really difficult for the Republicans to hold on to the House, in my opinion.
And but that's kind of the way America has always kind of been, a checks and balance, And, and typically, you would want that. You would want both sides of the aisle represented, and you would hope that both sides would work together for the better common good. But we're not
occasionally. Yes,
but we're too busy calling each other liars and trolling each other on social media and stuff to actually get things done, which is a disservice to the American people. So on that prediction, I'm with you. And then another one, again, slower growth. I think we cannot emphasize, but it doesn't, coming from someone like myself or, saying this stuff, it has to come from the White House. We have to, the press conferences, and we have to have them say, listen, it's going to hurt, because this is what here's our plan. Here's how, and show us, he likes charts. So, he loves charts now. So maybe we need to start showing the American people, which you are the master of the chart, the whiteboard. Maybe we need some boards up to show them this is how this could work if you stick with us.
Look, one thing I learned when I was in the White House is under promise and over deliver.
Under promise and over deliver.
Really important now in the economy. Yeah.
Now, do you think there's certain things you think that will speed growth up, or is it just there's just so much untangling of the? I look at the last administration, our economy was not like a fishing line that you thought you could get the knot out, and every time you pulled, it just got bigger and bigger. Next thing you know, you're cutting the whole line, which means you have to rerun the reel. And I think we're in the middle of the process of him trying to rerun the reel, but you also have to be careful about being too braggadocious. I think that's one criticism that I think is okay to say about President Trump, is that when he's focused on doing something, he's 100% in. But I think sometimes you have to let the American people know that this is not going to be easy.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, back to the point about, you know, talking about things that you're actually doing, I'm thinking about writing about this next week in the Wall Street Journal. Think about this for just a minute. When the government passes red tape and regulation, it adds cost to the economy. And we know the cost of the rules and regulations because when they flow through the process, the rule gets announced with a cost estimate of what it's going to require in time and money. That is put together by, you know, various entities inside the executive branch and certified by the Office of Management and Budget. So, for example, we know during 8 years that Barack Obama was president, roughly $800 billion of additional cost was added to the economy. Trump comes in 2017 and immediately undoes a bunch of that. And every dollar that he reduces in cost and regulation is a dollar that a company can use to invest in plants, equipment, or people.
Right.
Biden comes in and puts $1.8 trillion in additional cost on the economy in 4 years, more than twice as much as Barack Obama did in 8. And now what is happening is that this administration is undoing a lot of that red tape and regulation. The president ought to be heralding this.
Yes.
But he doesn't talk about it. But again, think about it. If he undoes a bunch of that, what happens is that goes straight to the bottom line. That means American companies, big and small, have more money that they can invest in plants, equipment, and most important of all, people. And, you know, it'd be great for him to be, you know, out there touting that more. But, and again, under promise and over deliver.
You know, and I need to live my life that way as well, under promise and over deliver. That's a great point. Now, listen.
Yeah, your wife says in particular you need to under promise and over deliver.
Yes, 1,000%. wise advice. Now, listen. This is going to get a little hostile here. Now, this ludicrous prediction of yours, you have Denver in the Super Bowl, which means that means the New England Patriots would not be. So I have. I'm understanding. I know you're running the numbers. There's some secret stat I don't know about here.
No. Look, when it comes to sports and culture, music and movies, I'm just winging it. Look, I was born in Denver, Colorado.
Okay, Connie all Rice right. There's some of, there's some roots there.
Part owner of the Broncos. And I mean, I have to say the Bills are very impressive.
Yes.
Here as the season has drawn to a close, and they could be contenders. Are you a Bills fan?
Oh, I'm a Patriots fan, but I am well aware. I think this is the most dangerous Buffalo Bills team that has been in the playoffs because he's beaten everybody he's needed to be in the regular season, and he's the most experienced. He's been there. And he's not going to be, and I think this is safe to say across the board, while we got two young quarterbacks, you know, in Denver and in New England, and the Texans, I just feel that his experience and the big games he's played in makes, I think Buffalo is the favorite. I don't want to see it. And then, of course, if they get there, we know what they're going to do. So it's not going to happen anyways. I think the monster is probably Seattle, if I'm being fair. But at least, okay, I can respect the fact that because you have roots with Denver, that's why you made that prediction. So this wasn't broke down on the board.
Yeah, no, this is no. I mean, I did not spend 2 days in consultation with everybody, you know, in sports betting world and former coaches in the NFL and blah, blah, blah. No, this is emotional. I hope the Broncos have had a great season.
Yes, they have. And they got a great coach.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The games have been phenomenal. I think it's been a nice distraction, with the exception of the Pittsburgh game. It was down to the wire. It was every game mattered. And I think it was a good break for a lot of Americans just to get back and get back to yelling at things that don't matter anymore. You know, being mad at your favorite team or trashing the team. That's the good stuff. We have to get back to that and not trashing someone because they have a difference of opinion on their policies or how they vote. So I'm hoping that at some point we can get back to all that. But, you know, if Denver, I think if Denver pulls through Buffalo this weekend, there's a good chance that your prediction will probably come to pass. I don't think New England's ready yet. But it's going to be great games, and I'm enjoying it, and it's nice to see that you're enjoying stuff. Now the board, your famous board. Now, I've seen whenever you're on, I always hear people want to update the board. And I absolutely refuse. No.
Yeah.
The board is iconic. I'm hoping at some point I can get you on my podcast show or I could be gifted a board because I think it's the best way to make your point. Because for me, it's this, when I see you on the board, I think professor, educator, coach, like what he's putting up there matters. And I think we also, do we have a specific name for the board? I don't think board is good enough name. Like we need to name this thing.
Well, I'm going to leave that to you. I'm humble in the presence of the board, and I know what the board insists that I do, which is take the most essential point that I want to make and put it on the board in a way that it sticks with people when they hear it and see it.
Well, it does, and it's become its own thing, and I'm a big fan of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I sit down in the chair, and the first thing that somebody says in my ear is, do you have a board today, and how many do you have?
Yes.
So,
yes. You know, and this might be a marketing opportunity here for you.
Every facility around America.
You know, this is capitalism at its finest. And, man, thank you so much, Mr. Rowe, for joining us today. Always a pleasure. I every time I get a chance to speak with you, I always learn something, and I really appreciate that. Thank you for your time, sir.
Well, Tyrus, thank you so much. Congratulations on stepping in for who was the guy that you're replacing? I can't even remember.
Greg Kilmeade.
Kilmeade, yeah, Greg, yeah, Bob Kilmeade.
Yeah, you go. Yeah, Daryl Kilmeade.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What it is, this is Tyrus filling in for the great Brian Kilmeade on the Brian Kilmeade Show. And again, a lot of the things that we talked about today, I really pushed hard in my book, What It Is, America. I'm very proud of this book. We will forget the fact that it was written by the great president, Donald J. Trump, which was unbelievable, an amazing honor, and I'm very humbled that the president, I wrote this book chronologizing what we've been dealing with over the last 4 years, 5 years, and I sent it to him because, again, I talked about the president, and I thought it was respectful to send him a copy to let him know what I was going to be discussing, and since I was discussing him, and he liked what I had to say so much, he wrote me the foreword. So this is by far my favorite book. And it's the last book I will be topless in, that's for sure. We've come full circle with that. So you can check it out. You can pick it up at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. What It Is, America. This is Tyrus for Brian Kilmeade.
So busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
He's so busy, he couldn't be here today. That's why Tyrus is filling in for Brian Kilmeade on the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm very excited about our next guest, Rob Bluey, president and executive editor at the Daily Signal. Welcome, Robert. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Hey, Tyrus, it's great to be with you. Good to see you again.
I appreciate you, man. Hey, so let's just get right here. You got a good article out there. Headless declares war on Pentagon bureaucracy.
That's right. I got to spend all day Monday. It was an early start and a late finish with Secretary of War Pete Hegseth. He traveled to Texas, made about four different stops throughout the day, starting in San Antonio to visit some wounded veterans, then heading to Fort Worth, where he visited the Lockheed Martin plant, a stop to do an enlistment ceremony, and then finally finishing the day at SpaceX. And the one message that you heard consistently from Hegseth throughout the day was that he is fed up with the bureaucracy at the Pentagon. He's tired of hearing excuses from defense contractors that they can't get things done on time and under budget. And he is going to make some changes, not only with personnel that he's put in place there at the Pentagon, but also President Trump announcing last week that he's not tolerating these defense contractors who look to stock buybacks and other things to enrich themselves as opposed to help the American people.
You know, and he's streamlining, which seems to come under so much fire, whether it's wanting soldiers to be in fighting shape, wanting are things, if you say you're going to do something and you sign a contract, you get it done. Those things you would think across the board, everybody would be okay with. But you automatically get into, I still have a heart. I got to know Pete well here, know his family well. He's a hardworking guy. He wears it on his sleeve. So I'm not surprised about all the stops because he had like 45 shows when he was here. But it just is amazing to me how much pushback you see coming from mainstream media. What he's doing, we should all be like, yes, we should 1,000% want our soldiers to be in great shape and be given the opportunity to do their job at the highest level and the best opportunities for them. And then at the same time, making sure that the people who don't have to run out boots on the ground have their backs and have their equipment and everything they need ready and willing. I don't see the argument here. Do you?
Tyrus, it's a great point. I think to you and me, it's common sense, right?
Yeah.
It's nothing that you wouldn't expect from the Department of War. But let's face it, Pete Hegseth stepped into a job where you had years of abuse of the system. You had a devotion to climate change and the Pentagon focusing on issues other than war fighting. Obviously, there was a whole big debate during the COVID years about kicking people out who didn't want to take the vaccine. I mean, you could go down the list of the social issues that really, I think, divided our troops unnecessarily. And so when I had the opportunity to spend time with the secretary on Monday, things that you hear him talk about are the surge in recruitment and the fact that there are more and more Americans who want to join the military today. I mean, he calls them the real 1% because it's still a small percentage overall of the people in our country, but they want to give, you know, everything they have to the U.S. military and join one of the service branches. He talks about improving the barracks and making some of those just daily experiences that our troops have, pay increases. That's one of the things that when President Trump proposed this increase in defense spending, I think he wants to see that money go to those people who are serving on the front lines defending our country.
You know, and that's a tremendously a great point, because one of the things that when you make an argument that really shouldn't be an argument, you can well, is it going to be this or this or what are the line, you can specify or look at special situations or whatever, but it just there the argument on the on I hate the other side, because it really isn't a side. The people who have a problem with this, they're not consistent, because one of the things that I found particularly hilarious was, and Gutfeld, we had a clip of Morning Joe where he was blaming Pete for hiring fat ICE workers. And he was, and I was like, he doesn't have anything to do with that. And they're rushing and people are volunteering and lining up trying to help because we have 10 to 20 million illegals running around this country. But they were now fat shaming him for hiring, supposedly, even though he has nothing to do with it.
Right.
It's just they forget the whole point before was, shouldn't it, if he, isn't that a win for them? Because their whole point was like he was weeding out people who were overweight in the military for damn good reason. And yet some of the ICE agents apparently are on the heavy side and they have a problem with the hiring. I can't, like, you laughed while you were talking about it. You have to laugh, but what makes you laugh, unfortunately, when you think about it, makes you cry. I think that's a safe, is this not pure insanity?
It does. Well, Tyrus, I mean, you and I know very well that it's no matter what Donald Trump does, Pete Hegseth does, Kristi Noem does, they're going to take the opposite position. I think that's what they thrive to, just be a contrarian in that regard. And unfortunately, it exposes them as fools. And you just, I think you and I look at it and we're like, okay, we hope that most Americans recognize this, what it is. And they simply do not want to see the changes that the Trump administration is ushering in. Now, Hegseth actually addressed some of the health issues. I mean, ICE is obviously separate, but I mean, he said that you have people showing up at some of these recruiting centers. He was in Los Angeles last week, for instance, and he said that they, you know, some people don't pass the physical fitness tests. So that they do have very high standards. I mean, he does PT with the troops when he's on some of these trips. And so I'm glad to see that he is restoring, you know, that sense of honor, what it means to serve in our country. And as it pertains to ICE specifically, not to go too far astray here, but if the Department of Homeland Security is going to carry out President Trump's promise to the American people to continue deportations, they need the help.
Yeah.
And in some cases, they're going to be looking in unorthodox places all over this country to find those ICE officers and others who are willing to serve. And let's not forget that those ICE officers are experiencing a surge of attacks on them. Things like doxing, you know, attacks on their family, not to mention, you know, real life physical threats. And so there's a lot to be said for those who give up a career in the private sector and go to work for the government these days.
You know, and one of the things that, and you talked about the surge of recruitment, I think when you make it fair, and what I mean by fair is, like, here's the line, and only if you are able to meet this standard can you get in. And that's fair. It's across the board. And so when a young man or a young woman wants to go into the military, they know what's expected of them. It's not, hey, how did you vote, or who did you sleep with, or, you know, or what is your religious belief, or whatever those things that mean absolutely nothing in terms of character and what you're going to do on the battlefield. But being physically and mentally in shape, being the best you, that's what the whole point of joining the military is, to bring out the best in you, to defend the country, to give you all the. So when you, and you're seeing, I think America, the real America, sees it, and we're seeing a certain, that's why people are volunteering, because it's a real American issue. If American people weren't behind it, we would not see the numbers of people willing to volunteer. I mean, you have one of the, Dean Cain, Superman, the actor, he joined ICE, and he was getting all kinds of stuff. And because he was Superman, he was physically able to do to pass the requirements. But I understand, was as we look at how big these numbers are, you might have to lower some standards just to get eyes on the street, just to have numbers, because we are seeing the professional protesters really ramping things up and showing up. And they're not protesters, because they're there to obstruct. They're there to cause anarchy. They're there to try to get a viral video of a ICE officer losing it on somebody or some form of brutality. And then that they will run that machine on every network and try to change the public opinion or change the narrative without actually using facts. So and you're seeing, so I would agree with you. I think the real pulse of America has kind of figured this all out, I think.
And the sad part of all of that is, yes, you are having so many more people sign up to join, and they are experiencing a difficult situation. And it's entirely, it can be entirely prevented if you had the mayors of places like Los Angeles and Minneapolis and Chicago support and help the federal government in this particular case carry out and enforce the rule of law in these cities. Instead, what you have are the political leaders in those places, the mayors, who have taken a stand against Donald Trump, against ICE, and I think that in some cases have led these protesters to take some pretty extreme actions against law enforcement, including ICE. And so I hope that the American people again will recognize that they elected Donald Trump to carry out this mission in our country. There was an unprecedented number of illegal aliens who came to the United States during Joe Biden's watch. Donald Trump said he was going to address this problem, and that meant removing them from the streets. They're taking away jobs. They're relying on public services that should be going to American taxpayers. And instead, you have these Democrat mayors who are just putting their foot down and saying, no, we're on the other side of you. We're not going to relent, and we're just going to foment division.
Some of the worst comments I think I've ever heard in terms of leadership was when the mayor of Minnesota came out, and we were just getting reports of the police officer, or the ICE officer, whose life was put in jeopardy by the woman who drove the car into him. And it was already murder. It was this. Where were you to tell them, the people, like, listen, a tragedy has happened. Nobody wants to see anyone get killed or shot. And nobody wants to see anyone get run over by a car. Okay, so let's not forget that. But as there was a moment there where he could have came out and said, we need to step down, tone it down. Remember why we're all human beings protesting. This is too far, and let the investigation. But this is what makes me question things. And I don't want to get into conspiracies or get anybody sued or anything, but I really feel like we need to continue to follow the money in Minneapolis, because some are in Minnesota, and some of these reactions, they seem very planned and just kind of happen way too quick. Like, you didn't even take time to get all reports before you're coming out and immediately going into murder, this, that, and then every celebrity you had the pins. It was really quick, but they did not get the George Floyd reaction from America at all, because I think America was wise to it.
Yeah, Tyrus, you're right to question it, because it's not just Minneapolis where we're seeing this. It's cities all across the country, including I've witnessed it firsthand in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. Why is it that these protests always seem to start at the top of the hour and at the bottom of the hour, right? I mean, it's clear. Like, it seems that they're getting paid by the hour to be out there in front of different buildings, including Fox. I mean, right on Capitol Hill, I mean, you see them regularly show up to protest at Fox News.
I casually stroll by them when I walk in. Amazingly, I never get really
right.
I'm not there. I'm not who they're mad at, I guess. I lucked out.
And you know, it's a litany of issues. Like, obviously, like, the issue today is ICE, but, you know, a few weeks ago it was the National Guard. They didn't, you know, like that. And then before that it was, you know, Israel and Palestine. So, I mean, you can take this. It's the same people who tend to show up at these things. And you have to wonder who is the source of their funding or support, or who's the organizer behind it. And it's troubling that that we don't have all that information, because the American people, and maybe even some of the elected officials, are led to believe that it's a spontaneous uprising, when really it's not.
It's about as manufactured as a movie, honestly. But they're not getting Academy Award winning actors, because the celebrities, they're not going to stand out in that cold. They're going to sit from atop their safe little award shows and wear a little pin and say something and encourage people to put themselves in harm's way, to make I hate to use the term, but the F around and find out. This, I would never allow somebody in my family, if they were going to go out and they strongly believed about something, and I would support their belief. But if they were like, I want to go protest, I would have to ask them what for and why. And what is your vision of protesting? Because protesting, to me, is standing outside of a government building with your sign or your bullhorn or your song and bringing awareness that you of your cause. That at no point does that mean you throw stuff, attack, impede, spit on. Like, once you cross those lines, you are no longer a protester. And when you're attacking government officials, in my opinion, you're a domestic terrorist. I mean, I would not send out anyone in my family, whether I believed it strongly or not, to protest in the way with given what we're seeing coming from these and they're professional protesters. But the attacks, their training on ways to stop ICE agents. But they're being trained by whom? With no clear understanding of how the law works, they're just putting them in harm's way, and it's a sad thing. But at the same time, there's a certain arrogance there, that virtuous thing of like they're martyrs. But then here's and I'll get to the point. All of these things that we're seeing that are manufactured, right? The whole Palestine, what was it? I think the most hilarious was like Queers for Palestine. That's like Hens for Chick-fil-A, and all these things. But yet here is something going on in Iran, where real people are in harm's way. Where are they? Where are they?
Yeah, the Columbia University campus is...
where are they?
Is empty, right.
We could spend the next... I guess we'll just, you know what, that's what we'll end is. You and I, let's meet again soon. Maybe I can get you to come on my podcast and see if you can find out where the virtue signalers are. You know why? Because it's very simple. Because President Trump did it, man. Again, thank you so much for coming on today, Rob. I appreciate you. Great stuff as always. And I got to get you locked down on my podcast soon.
Thanks, Tyrus. You bet. I'll be there.
Appreciate you, man. All right. Well, you got Tyrus filling in for the great Brian Kilmeade on The Kilmeade Show.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Trump is looking for this kind of pandemonium to go on, like you just described, so that he can declare martial law or something, and also cancel the midterms.
Well, under martial law, you won't have elections.
Yeah, that's what she's saying. But listen,
because he's worried. He even said, if the Democrats take Congress next time, I will be impeached, which means that he could be convicted and sent to jail. He does not want that to happen.
Wow. Just, I mean, the jokes keep coming. Wow. She must, Behar must have been something before electricity. I'll tell you that, because it is electrically shocking how stupid the comments that they make. They just make things up. And I'm sitting here the whole time I talk, always worried about putting out the wrong thing without anything to support it. I don't want to besmirch somebody's name without any evidence or thoughts or whatever. Or I'll even say, like, hey, in my opinion. So at least you know it's coming from my thought process. Absolutely embarrassing. They just make stuff up, and which is fine. If you want to sit at your coffee table, eating your Intermins, watching your reruns of Perry Mason while you berate your staff and your family, that's fine. But when you go on a platform or a national television network and just spew straight lies and just propaganda, shame on you and a shame on the network. At some point, there are hundreds of talented women out there that could be doing great things on The View, and they can be as left as they want to be. That's not the issue. It's just straight up mean and hurtful. And you know what? We need to smile. We need to laugh some more. Like I said, you can check me out the next couple days, January 16th, 17th. I'm going to be at Palm Beach doing my stand-up tour. And you can get tickets at Tyrus Smash Linktree.